You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office. Happy to be with you on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. Every Saturday morning, we bring you highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week from 8 to 9 in the morning on 750 AM. Holy Name Cathedral Rector Father Greg Sakowitz and Graziano Marcheschi of Shalom Media kicked off our broadcast week. They talked about Christian unity with Dr. Dan Olson, Director of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the Archdiocese, and Pastor Brian Weiss, Associate Pastor of Outreach at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Naperville.
We were talking about this move towards Christian unity. And Dan, I think you wanted to weigh in on that last question.
Yeah, just the sense that all of our churches are struggling for membership right now. And how important is ecumenism in the front of people's minds? And I would make the argument that it very much has transitioned, not out of our churches, but from our churches to our homes. That these conversations of ecumenical dialogue are occurring when a Catholic marries a Lutheran or a Baptist marries an evangelical of a different community. That these are where the conversations are really taking place, a lot of vitality there. So I would suggest that the ecumenical movement isn't really waning, but it's becoming more grassroots, more in our domestic churches than our church of the community. So I think these conversations are being taken upon in those places. And I would also say that it's becoming more apparent to Catholic identity that to be in dialogue is part of that, that to be in conversations from popes of recent vintage, they all are very much engaged in dialogue among Christians. It's part of who we are as Catholics from the top down right now.
Yeah. In fact, are you finding, Brian, just what Dan had mentioned, the grassroots, because do you deal a lot with people, you know, Catholic, Lutheran marriage, Lutheran Baptist, Lutheran Methodist? Do you find those differences in people coming to you to talk about that? Let's focus on the Lutheran Catholic marriage. People come to see you?
Yeah. It's actually pretty common, and I think one of the things that we try to discuss is honoring the faith traditions of your spouse, and how do you raise a family, you know, children, and just being really respectful in the conversation rather than making the other conform or the other give up something that's extremely important to them. And that's why I think a lot of this is to be celebrated. The direction that we have taken in the last, since Vatican II, these conversations have allowed us to really honor each other's traditions and be together as one. And so for me, we don't claim to have all of the answers, but we are able to walk with families and celebrate the unity that they have, and I think that's extremely an honor for us to get to do. And the other aspect too that I have with all of this is we have common themes that are coming out of just not just prayer or these relationships that we have with one another, but also like social justice things that we all agree on. Which is kind of the theme for this year, which is, justice you shall pursue. What I like is these earlier conversations that happened years ago allow us now to pray for other things and look at creative ways for us as Lutherans and Catholics or other Christians to come together and pray together, pray for justice and peace within our world.
You know, if someone were to say, now look, Christ started a church, and it's obvious he only wanted one church. He wanted his believers to be united. 1,500 years, there was one church. No one's going to argue that it was a mess 500 years ago and things needed reforming and people did what they had to do. But, okay, now, you know, Catholics and Lutherans in particular have agreed that, you know, faith and works were pretty much in agreement on that. So what's keeping us apart now? So if somebody was like, I just don't get it. You know, you people, you claim to be followers of Christ. Why can't you get it together? What's still dividing us?
I'll toss a few things out there. You know, the first is, so I'm a pastor, which would be the closest thing to a priest, and I'm married. The other is that we have, in our tradition of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, women can be pastors. And so that's two of the hurdles right there that just need to be figured out. But I agree with you that theologically we are so much closer now than we were 500 years ago, that we really have resolved a lot of the bigger issues, and it's just coming to figure out what does unity look like moving forward with the rites of ordination and honoring the decisions that have been made in each other's traditions.
Now, your thoughts, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a ton of theological issues that we've come together in agreement on. There's some that still remain. You know, how is the church mm-hmm. to be structured? How many sacraments are there? All these different, very important and weighty issues. I always go back to the issue of the heart, though. I mean, conversion. The whole of the Christian community speaks about conversion. And until we're all converted to the need for Christian unity, until we feel that as a pain that exists in our church today that needs to be remedied, I think that's the last hurdle that will allow some of these other theological breakthroughs to occur. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I really think until all Christians realize that this isn't what Christ wants, it's not going to happen.
The best definition of conversion I heard is that conversion is not necessarily the miracle of the moment, but rather the task of a lifetime. We're ongoing conversion daily in our lives.
Following that discussion on Christian unity, Father Greg and Gratz talked with author Kenneth Woodward about his book, Getting Religion.
Tell us about your latest book, Getting Religion. How'd you come to that topic and the whole theme of it, Ken?
Well, a couple of things. Journalists are as good as their stories, and I had lots of stories to tell. I had met all the major figures. I mean, I knew the Dalai Lama. I used to tell him we're the same age. Mine is a few million incarnations. And Billy Graham, I covered him from beginning to end, saw his real change take place after he visited Eastern Europe and Poland. And, you know, the Berrigan brothers. Rabbi Heschel, Abraham Heschel, was probably the greatest spiritual figure I met. I didn't meet Merton. Of course, I know his life. He's probably the only one in the book that doesn't get criticized in one way or another. And so I decided to – the hardest part was to get a narrative. If I may, I'll explain that getting religion is what you know, when they say Clem, he went to the tent in revival and he got religion. So there's that sense deep in the American grain that you get religion. The other part of it is I'm learning to get religion. After all, I wasn't a religion expert when I became the religion editor. I became an expert 15 minutes after I got the job, however, and, which was amazing. So, and then the third meaning, the most important meaning, is that, as I argue in the book, you get religion within particular social historical contexts. As a result, if you look at the table of contents, you'll see that the word Protestant, Catholic, and Jew does not appear there at all. Hmm. Instead, I created some new categories to connect religion up with culture and politics. And we'll talk about politics in a sense because that's kind of sexy. But for example, all of us in this room, I'm sure, grew up in what I call, and I'm the elder statesman among us, embedded,
not by much.
embedded religion. Religion came with the territory. You know, if you were from Wisconsin, you were either Lutheran or Catholic.
Yep.
Big cities, Catholic. Went to South, where there's more Baptists than there are people, you know, you're going to be a Baptist. or they will at least flavor the Catholicism down there even. Yeah. So that's one kind of thing that we grew up with, and we were formed by that. And I want to get back to that formation point in a moment. When we talk about what's happening today. Another kind was movement religion, which really, I mean, after all, you have Exodus. Its movement is all over the Bible, but with Martin Luther King, with the civil rights movement. And the movement religion is the opposite of the religion I was just describing, embedded religion. Yeah, it didn't matter where you came from. It didn't matter whether you were Protestant, Catholic, Jew, or no religion. What mattered was the movement. We in the movement this, think this. We in the movement do that. And then you had other movements, the gay rights movement, the women's movement, et cetera. And there the movements, though secular, take on religious fervor. I mean, for Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan, the movement was their religion. Mm-hmm. Just as the recent editor, the publisher of the New York Times, Sulzberger, said that, you know, my religion is the New York Times. Then you have, instead of talking about evangelicalism, I talk about entrepreneurial religion. And that's a long story, but essentially there's a reason why evangelicals have ended up, there are several reasons actually, but historical ones, why they ended up on the side of free enterprise capitalism and therefore the Republican Party, because they are free enterprise. Father Greg, you're in a socialistic system. You get out of seminary and you get apprenticed to a pastor and they move you around the system. It's corporate, if not socialist, but corporate. Not so with the Jerry Falwells and others of the evangelical world. You go out and you start preaching, and if the Lord blesses you, you get a congregation. If you don't, you better find another job, selling soap or whatever. So entrepreneurial is very important and helps us explain people like Billy Graham and his organization and so forth. One more point. We saw at the in the 1980s or so more than 360 cults develop. Some of them old ones resuscitated brand new ones, Dr. Moon, the Moonies, et cetera. Almost all of them were constructed as sacred families, which is another chapter in there. And why did this happen? Well, this happened at a time when the family was falling apart. A lot of people didn't, and they didn't go after poor kids. They went after, you know, college freshmen, high school seniors from usually middle class and up. And they became substitute parents. So in all those ways, cultural situation, historical situation, social processes can shape religion.
Fascinating.
Ken just gave us a course.
Yeah. And I could
with
just,
one question.
I could just keep on listening. So I got the double entendre of the title, you know, getting. I wonder if I could just shift you. Why is it that within our culture, we're not getting religion anymore in either sense? You know, people are leaving in droves. We were talking about that in the first half, and not just within Catholicism, but across the board, maybe less so in Catholicism than in some other denominations. And also, it seems that the wider culture doesn't get what religion is because so many people see religion as the problem. They see religion as the cause of division. They see religion as the cause of war. They see religion as the cause of oppression and hate. You know, you've been studying this for a lot of years. What's your take on what's going on within the wider culture vis-a-vis?
Let me talk about the Catholic thing first of all. I said we were raised in embedded religion. It went with the territory, yeah. Okay? We Catholics, our generation, were raised communally. Everybody we knew, practically, most of us grew up
from the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood. The neighborhood raised you as well as everything mm-hmm, else.
Absolutely.
Okay? That's what changed more than anything else, in my view. The second thing, there was an unfortunate implementation of Vatican II. When they opened Vatican II, the American culture was one way. When they closed it, it had changed in just 4 years and was changing more because by 1968 there was all sorts of chaos. There was a bad time to reform. They should have done it a bit earlier. Pius XII thought about it before John the 23rd thought of it. So timing.
Did he choose not to move on it then?
What's that?
Did Pius choose not to move forward?
Well, I mean, there was a war. There were a lot of things. But he figured that, you know, Vatican I hadn't been completed, so they had to do something. Obviously, with people like Ottaviani running the show and so on, there would have been a lot different, probably not certainly as reformist. And you needed the theological fundament of the Nouvelle Theologie. You needed all those people say, oh, it must have been terrible in pre-Vatican II. Where do you think Vatican II came from? It came from the pre-Vatican II church. It had to. Where else could it come from? Mm-hmm. So people are naive about that. And young people today don't even know what the pre-Vatican II church, which I liked, by the way, just as I liked the Latin and miss it. So I'm one of those. But look, you have to understand.
But you've embraced post-Vatican II.
Selectively, excuse me.
At least, okay, you're very honest.
Well, I mean, no, in this sense, I mean, look, we're taught, I went to Jesuit high school, you were taught to go out and be Christ in the world. I didn't need the age of the layman, and I didn't need, what do they call the church of the people and all that kind of, I didn't need that. I mean, it's just that, it wasn't so much I rejected it, I didn't need it. The best thing that I learned is, was theological. I saw friends of mine, Protestant theologians, and that coming together was really, and learning from each other. That's what I learned at my job at Newsweek. We used to do a Jesus cover, if you remember, almost every year, sometimes twice a year.
Yes, I remember that.
And basically what you did, besides trying to sell magazines at Christmas time or Easter time, you really gathered up all the biblical new things in biblical studies, mm-hmm. Raymond Brown's work and all that kind of thing. I remember having to write a story on his Birth of the Messiah, a book, a monumental book, mm-hmm. and I had to say in the first paragraph that, you know, the Christmas story isn't true, but it's truer than true. It was one of the more difficult opening paragraphs I ever had to write in my life.
What year was that about, in the 60s?
Yeah, I think we're maybe 70s. Yeah. I'm just revisiting.
The thought that struck me, you took over the post at Newsweek.
64.
In the midst of Vatican II, right in the very heart of it.
Right.
In the very middle of it. What a time to begin. Wow.
Well, it was because they wanted me, oddly enough, I was hired because I was a Catholic. And they were.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, I'm sure, because they didn't have anybody who knew what was going on. And they figured I went to Notre Dame and Catholic. Hey, you must know something about this. I know
we hire you.
Ken was a terrific guest, and you can hear that entire interview by going to our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. That's archchicago.org. Stick around for highlights from our Black Catholic Initiative and Catholic Charities radio programs. Back after a short break.
Join us for a celebration of life in the Archdiocese of Chicago on the weekend of January 12th and 13th. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick, president of the March for Life Chicago. We're planning many Respect Life activities for that weekend, including a youth rally, Masses for Life, a Rose Dinner, and of course, the March for Life Chicago itself. A standing room only crowd is expected at Holy Name Cathedral on Sunday at 11 a.m. as Cardinal Subic celebrates the Archdiocesan Mass for Life. The spotlight turns to Federal Plaza at 2 in the afternoon for the March for Life Chicago. Lots of great speakers will address the crowd, among them Ryan Bomberger of Radiance Foundation and Jeannie Mancini of the National March for Life. The march will wind its way through the streets of Chicago in a massive show of support for the sanctity of life. For more information on all the activities planned for January 12th and 13th, go to marchforlifechicago.org. That's marchforlifechicago.org. Be sure to dress warm.
Cardinal Blaise Cupich speaks on behalf of the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
Now more than ever, it is important that we as a society recognize how poverty and injustice strip away human dignity. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development works with nonprofits, both faith-based and secular, to provide the vital support needed to promote systemic change in our communities.
To find out more about CCHD and to contribute, go to archchicago.org and click on Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
Please join me as we work together in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to fight poverty and ensure that everyone, especially those who live on the margins of society, participates in decisions that affect their lives, families, and communities. Now more than ever, we need the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
Hi, my name is Craig. I was homeless for 2 years. Then I met Miss Ramona, a case manager at Catholic Charities. She found a place for me to live and is helping me with a resume and finding a job. I feel safe and away from the gun violence I know too well, having been a victim of it. The more I meet with Catholic Charities, the better I feel. They have changed my life. They're called Chicago's Good Samaritans, but to me, they are turnaround experts. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
We'll show you how the Catholic Campaign for Human Development reaches out to people living on the margins. We'll take you to the UIC Pavilion, where more than 8,000 middle school students celebrated their faith at Holy Fire. And we'll introduce you to Deacon Freddie, who is on a mission to provide toys for needy children in Guatemala.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review, where we bring you highlights from Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that air Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. This past week, Deacon John Cook had a very interesting conversation with the president of Hales Franciscan High School, Anthony Daniels Halisi.
So, President Halisi, when we left off, we were talking about the storied history of Hales Franciscan, but also the hand that Father Augustus Toden played in it.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. So again, you know, in 1879, he inspires, actually, the Franciscan province of the Sacred Heart, which is the province that started Hales Franciscan High School, to start the first school for African Americans, which for the province, which was in Quincy, called St. Joseph School, right?
Yes.
And then the Franciscans, of course, accept him into their school, Quincy College, then with St. Francis Solanus, and educated him. And the Franciscans that are part of the order that created Hales Franciscans were also the ones who made the appeal overseas to Rome to get him in the seminary in Rome when none of the seminaries in the United States would accept him, right? So played an integral part in him getting through seminary and ultimately being ordained. And then when you kind of flash forward, that got the Franciscans of the Sacred Heart Province to expand their education apostolate, where they were focused on serving African Americans. They end up in Chicago at Corpus Christi. So Corpus Christi, they start a high school here for the African American community in 1945. Again, the predecessor school of that was St. Joseph's, which is, again, in 1879. So they do that until 1962, when they ended up getting a brand-new facility over here at Hales Franciscan High School. When St. Xavier College, which was here for women, left and moved to the southwest side, they took over the property, built a new building. They closed their Corpus Christi High School and ended up opening this, and so the young men from Corpus Christi came over here, plus they took the young men out of St. Elizabeth, converted it back to all girls, and all the boys from St. Elizabeth ended up coming to Hales when it opened in 1962. But the beauty of this is just the hand of God is on Hales Franciscan, has always been. This has always been this incredible place for young African-American men, where God has put his hands on this, and really this whole trajectory of having a school, and we're the only school of this type in the state of Illinois that was started just for African-American men. There are two others around the country, St. Augustine's in New Orleans, and then Vervin Day in Watts. But in Illinois, we're the only one, right?
Yes.
And all this was put in motion. The reason that Hills Franciscan sits here today is because a young man who was a lay apostle before he became a priest named Augustus Tolton inspired the order to open a school for African Americans in Quincy in 1878.
I am blown away. First of all, that you have that kind of history inside of you and you can share it so easily. And I don't know, but is that part of his story, or is that being shared as Father Augustus Tolton is being considered as a saint?
It is. There's
okay.
Inside of many of the documents, it talks about the roles that the Franciscans play, especially mm-hmm. one Franciscan by the name of Father Richard. It talks about him, the Franciscans of the Sacred Heart Province that started Hales, accepting him into Quincy, which is a school that they operated. It talks about them writing the letter to Rome, which ultimately got him into a seminary. So I think the Franciscans of the Sacred Heart Province, the friars, are really humble, and they don't talk about it a lot.
Mm.
But that was the thing that inspired us in the African-American community to come forth and say, you know, not this school. This school is divinely created. It has a pedigree. It has a history. And this is something that, you know, God has his hands on through the inspiration of the school through Father Tolton and the Franciscans, that, you know, this school is worthy of saving. And the incredible work that is done, we've graduated 4,000 African-American males since our founding in 1962. If we think about our predecessor school, Corpus Christi, that's where Father George Clemens went.
Oh,
he
wow.
was inspired as a seventh grader. He says it all the time when he speaks. It was the Franciscans of the Sacred Heart Province, the ones who started Hales, who also had Corpus Christi and St. Joseph back with Augustus Tolton. He saw the work that they were doing in the community, and it inspired him to want to be a priest. And why is that important? Because then you have someone like Father Michael Flagler, who's doing incredible work, who says George Clemens is his mentor. You know.
Yes.
So when I think about the work that this Franciscans of the Sacred Heart Province has done in this space and the people that they've inspired and touched, literally 4,000 students, but we think about their parents, you think about the teachers, other people in here, close to 5,000-6,000 people have been inspired to go on and do great things because of that order putting its hands on Hales Franciscan, Corpus Christi, and, of course, St. Joseph School in partnership with Father Augustus Tolton. So this school has to stay open. It has to continue doing the incredible work that it's doing in the African-American community on behalf of our black boys.
So, and thank you for sharing that. It's just wonderful to hear all this great information. So with about 2 minutes left, tell us what's going on now.
So we opened Hales Franciscan, you know, in 1962. The school did incredible things, and like all schools, sometimes it hits a tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Hales kind of hit that moment. One of the things that happened is you had an out-migration of a lot of middle-class black families to the suburbs. You had an explosion of charter schools. There's 143 now selective enrollment schools, and so there's a lot of competition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do is just to continue putting forth a vision for young men at Hales Franciscan that attracts them back to the school tries to get the community to understand that you can send your kid to a school that has the things that we have in terms of a rigorous curriculum and all those things, or at least they say that 100% graduation. But you need to send your children to a school that also has the faith-based components and the character-building components, because that's what's going to make them stand out when they get their degrees from college and they're seeking jobs. It's like, how do they present themselves as men? And that's what's going to be important to them being builders in our community and stabilizing our communities going forward. So we changed the model. We're now kind of a service learning academy focused on engineering and entrepreneurship, because we believe those mindsets in conjunction with a spiritual grounding will make our young men stand out. So we're in the midst of recruiting for next year. So So if you've got a student in the 9th, 10th, or 11th grade who are looking for a school, Hills Franciscan is here.
Give us some information so that people will have it.
They can call us at 773-285-8400, or they can go to our website, www.halesfranciscan.org. They can give me a call if they want to at 312-371-0815. And, we need all the assistance we can to make sure that this institution that Father Augustus Tolton, the Franciscan Friars, and, of course, God has put his hands on.
And the Friars are still working with you, correct?
That is true.
Yes.
So the Friars are here. They've been acting as our chaplains and teaching courses, and we're so thankful to have them.
Principal Helisi, thank you so much for coming on. God bless you for all the wonderful work that you're doing, that you continue to do, and may he bless the future of Hales Franciscan High School and all the children, students that are crossing that path. Thank you so much.
All right, and thank you for being a blessing and inviting us on today.
God bless.
God bless.
And Deacon John tells me he'll bring back Anthony as a guest in the near future. Let's turn now to Catholic Charities President Monsignor Michael Boland, who featured two guests who are responsible for enhancing the quality of life for senior citizens.
Over the years, Catholic Charities has offered comprehensive services so that seniors are able to live independently or with caregivers in their homes and communities. And in addition, we have expanded to meet the challenging needs of seniors who may be low income or living alone without family nearby through our home care program. And joining me this morning, I'm very grateful to Marianne Bebot, who is our Vice President of Senior Services, and Angela Taylor, who is our Associate Vice President of Senior Services, Community-Based Services, and Auxiliary Services. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Monsignor.
It's great to have you with us. Marianne, maybe you could tell us, our listeners, about our work with older adults and the caregivers who help meet their needs.
Sure. Well, here at Catholic Charities, our priority is to provide whatever our seniors need to be able to remain independent in the community for as long as possible. We do that through a variety of ways. Home care is one of our bigger programs. We have home care aides who come out to the seniors' home throughout the day to really help them with what they need. We have adult daycare sites, we have care coordinators, and really anything the senior needs, we try to provide.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And a lot of times people don't realize that these services are available, and they really can help, especially a person who's also trying to caregive, but also maybe working or other kinds of things. Maybe, Angela, you could tell us a little about how our partnership with local universities and nursing students.
We partner with the nursing students from Resurrection University, and thanks to that partnership, our training program is second to none. So what we do is we bring the nursing students in, we divide our home care groups up into smaller groups, and so they go into classroom settings, about 15 or 20 home care aides. The nursing students teach them about diabetes and health promotion. They teach them about self-care. They teach them about healthy eating. They also train them on how to recognize signs of a stroke and the appropriate way to contact 911 in the event they think someone is having a stroke. Apparently, it's very important that you indicate this person is having a stroke at the time you call 911. And so they train them on things like that. We have a bed in what we call our training apartment, and these nursing students teach them how to properly transfer the clients from bed to wheelchair and vice versa. So this program has been phenomenal with the help of the nursing students.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. Because, you know, there is, you know, with our nursing home at Holy Family and, you know, other places that I've been to, that, you know, you realize that there is really an art and a right way to transfer someone, and safe to do that. Because when I see sometimes people who are trying to help, oftentimes someone they love, and I'm just amazed that they don't pull the arm right out of the socket. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to help the person, they're like pulling them, and it's like the worst thing you can do. And so it is interesting to see how, and you realize how you to do it right and to do it safely. And for both for the person not mm-hmm. to fall, but also the worker, the home care aide, not to be hurt, because you can be very hurt if you don't do it right, because it is, they don't realize when a person the weight of a person is very challenging if you are trying to transfer them from bed to a you know, the wheelchair to a chair, whatever it is. It's the most dangerous time when you're, I think, when you're trying to really help someone. And that's really wonderful to have a resurrection nursing students do that, because it's great for them to be probably seen as teachers after being taught to, you know, being taught all the time, and people are showing them, so to be able to realize that's a skill they have, and they can share that, and that's really great. And it's great to have a place, a room set up like that, they can actually be, you know, to realize what this might be like, a person's apartment, a person's home, or, you know.
Yeah, we take full advantage of that. So in that, we teach them how to clean appropriately, even if something as simple as washing dishes. You deal with seniors who had a specific way that they clean, and so how we see clean and how a senior sees clean is completely different. And so taking that time to really show them the importance of detail and making sure you get every nook and cranny. And with those nursing students, like you were saying, the importance of knowing how to pivot and how to position your feet so that you don't injure yourself, pull a muscle, hurt your back, that is critical. And so this program has just been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And also, you know, I think we all appreciate the fact that for many people, having someone in their home is a challenge at the beginning. It is hard sometimes to admit that, well, we might need help. And even though it's a little at the first, but having someone in within the walls of your house when you're used to, or your apartment used to being alone, or, you know, with another person, but not someone you don't really know, and then to have people do something, simple things, because we all are a bit probably hypochondriac about, not hypochondriac, but you know, we do things, idiosyncrasies that we have to do things certain ways, and it's the only way it can be done. You know? So I'm sure there's a challenge for caregivers to be able to know which, and to know that there's certain things that, and sometimes it's a simple thing about doing it the way the senior wanted to do it, and it makes everyone peaceful, you know, so.
Go to CatholicCharities.net to find out about all the services offered by Catholic Charities and how you can volunteer or donate to their much-needed ministries. That's CatholicCharities.net. Stick around. There's much more after a short break.
Chicago Catholic school families are receiving a present this Christmas season in the form of tax credit scholarships. Hi, I'm Dr. Jim Rigg, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Archdiocese of Chicago. The exciting news is that individuals and corporations that donate to tax credit scholarships will receive a 75% state tax credit while providing scholarship aid for students in need. Individual and corporate donors can reserve tax credits beginning January 2nd, but you need to take steps right now. Go to archchicago.org/TCS to guide you through the process. That site also shows you how to apply to receive scholarship money. You can also call 312-534-2617. Keep in mind, individuals can designate their donations to Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic Schools. The website, once again, archchicago.org/TCS, or call 312-534-2617. Thank you for helping families in our Catholic schools.
Hi, my name is Ramona. I'm a caseworker at Catholic Charities. I wish you could meet Craig, age 23, shot 3 times and homeless for 2 years before I met him. The more we met and I listened to him, the more he impressed me. We're working on his resume and job hunting. We're called Chicago's Good Samaritan, and you can be one too. Might you have a job for Craig and thousands of others like him? Join us at CatholicCharities.net.
Did you know you could meet your goal of running a marathon and grow in your faith at the same time? Hi, I'm Sister Stephanie of the Mission of Our Lady of the Angels here in Chicago. Our mission has valuable guaranteed entries into the 2019 Bank of America Chicago Marathon. We'll get you training help, a race weekend support crew, and much more. And by joining Team OLA, you can help support the Mission of Our Lady of the Angels as we provide a Catholic presence and very needed outreach to the poor on Chicago's West Side. So run with me and the rest of Team OLA in the 2019 Chicago Marathon. We also will have a team in the Bank of America Shamrock Shuffle this coming spring. Visit missionola.com for more information or call 773-486-4444. 8431. That's missionola.com or call 773-486-8431. Thanks and God bless.
Join us for a celebration of life in the Archdiocese of Chicago on the weekend of January 12th and 13th. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick, president of the March for Life Chicago. We're planning many Respect Life activities for that weekend, including a youth rally, Masses for Life, a Rose Dinner, and of course, the March for Life Chicago itself. A standing room only crowd is expected at Holy Name Cathedral on Sunday at 11 a.m. as Cardinal Subic celebrates the Archdiocesan Mass for Life. The spotlight turns to Federal Plaza at 2 in the afternoon for the March for Life Chicago. Lots of great speakers will address the crowd, among them Ryan Bomberger of Radiance Foundation and Jeannie Mancini of the National March for Life. The march will wind its way through the streets of Chicago in a massive show of support for the sanctity of life. For more information on all the activities planned for January 12th and 13th, go to marchforlifechicago.org. That's marchforlifechicago.org. Be sure to dress warm.
You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. Every Saturday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Thanks for letting us be part of your morning. Now again, Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. Dawn Fitzpatrick heads up the Respect Life Ministries for the Archdiocese of Chicago. She was a guest on Catholic Chicago this week with show hosts Father Greg Sackowitz and Graziano Marcheschi.
This coming Sunday, we have three exciting events coming up, one after another, all related to supporting the pro-life issue. First will be a youth rally in the auditorium at Holy Name Cathedral, followed by Mass for Life at Holy Name Cathedral, followed by the March for Life Chicago at Federal Plaza. And here telling us about all this is Dawn Fitzpatrick, the Senior Coordinator in the Office of Human Dignity and Solidarity, who heads up our Respect Life Ministries for the Archdiocese. So Dawn, tell us, so this youth rally, what time does that start? What's going to happen?
Okay, so doors open at 8 o'clock. And we have Steve Angrisano coming.
Steve Angrisano,
yes,
right.
he's just the master at running rallies for young people.
He's great.
He's a composer, a musician. He's in some of our hymnals, so you might recognize some of his music. His mass parts, Mass of a Joyful Heart, which I just love. And he has led so many youth rallies in Washington, D.C. with 25,000 people.
Yeah.
So, you know, our 400 or 500 is delightful for us, but easy for him.
I've been mistaken for him.
I could see that.
I see the picture here. And
well, mainly because his name is Angrisano. My first name is Graziano.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
At the L.A. Congress.
But he's so much younger than you. Wow.
Oh, come on.
Only if you're wearing your glasses. Take off your glasses, you know, no difference.
Well, maybe if he grew a beard, he would look, people would think he was you.
Yeah. Well, at the LA Congress, where he and I would both be speaking, several times I'd be in an elevator and people would look over and see my name tag and go, oh, I love your music. And
you
I would
were
just
like,
smile
I
and
love
say,
my music too.
Thank you very much.
That's funny.
Like, I just turn on the radio and listen to it. Thanks.
No, that is funny.
All right, so Steve Angrisano, major name, major excitement.
Major excitement.
How do people get there?
Well, at this point, we still have a few tickets left, so they could go to respectlifechicago.org and navigate to our events tab, and they could buy tickets. They're just $10. So we make it very affordable. We're not making a penny on it because I think, you know, by the time we pay for everything that it costs to run the rally, we're going to lose money. But that's okay.
So you don't have to come as part of a group. You can come as an individual.
You certainly can. We have groups coming, but you can come as a family.
Now, this is the $10 for the auditorium at the cathedral.
Yes. And then if we also, if probably if you bought a ticket today, you could also order a lunch. Now, that's for after Mass. We have, and then we're just $5, which again is exactly the cost of it. So I'm not making any money on it.
And we have a brand new auditorium in the cathedral.
Yes.
Brand new, renovated.
It's beautiful.
Really?
Gorgeous. The capacity is about 470.
Right. So we still have a few seats left.
Okay.
But, you know, we would love to have a closeout and a sellout. So it's going to be awesome.
And the rally, which begins at 8 o'clock, or at least the doors open.
The doors open at 8.
But they all come over for Mass at 11.
Yes. So it is an Archdiocesan Mass for Life. Cardinal Stupich is the main
presider.
Celebrant.
Mm-hmm.
We have some other priests and deacons that will be there
as well.
I'll
be a concelebrant for sure. Mm-hmm. I think there's 10 or 15 priests who will be on the altar.
So it's going to be really exciting. We will have hopefully a beautiful procession like they have in Washington.
And I think a couple of deacons too.
Yeah, I have several deacons that told me they want to be there.
Excellent.
And we have lots of space, especially for young people. Anyone's welcome. Last year, it was standing room only. And
yes, it was.
People preferred just to stand up against the wall rather than to, you know, to not
it was
be there.
Packed
so,
a year ago.
So I would love to see that happen again. It's so exciting for everybody to be together and to be praying for life.
Yeah. And then when Mass is completed, what happens, Don?
Wait, before you go, so did you say who's presiding?
Yes, Cardinal Stupich.
Yeah, Cardinal Stupich. Oh, sure, yes.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And homilist.
And homilist.
Yeah.
And is Father Greg concelebrating?
Yes.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Well, then, okay, forget all the other stuff. That's the reason. That's the reason you need to be there.
Oh, please, no.
Father Greg will be on the altar.
No. It's a tremendous spirit, led by the Spirit.
Yes, it will be a beautiful experience.
Kind. Mass is completed, and what happens?
So once Mass is over, people will probably go find something to eat and then make their way down to Federal Plaza, because at 2 o'clock, we will start our Rally for Life in the plaza, at the Federal Plaza, and then we will kick off a march right after the speakers complete.
Which, now, who's speaking?
Well, we have all kinds of people speaking. Cardinal Stupich will be there.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have Jeannie Mancini, who's the president of the March for Life in D.C. She's coming to speak here. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
And believe me, that's a huge gift for us, because I know how crazy I am this week. She's probably 100,000 times crazy, because she gets 600,000 people at her march and I get 6,000.
Yes. Now, will that be the following weekend?
That's actually next Friday.
In D.C.
In D.C. Okay. So for her and one of her staff members to join us this week is phenomenal. And it really shows how much they're endorsing the March for Life Chicago, that she's willing to do this for us. So,
yeah.
So what a wonderful gift. We also have Ryan Bomberger. And I don't know if you know who he is. He's an incredible national speaker. His story includes that he was conceived in rape. And his mother gave him the gift of life. His father was black, his mother was white, and so he's mixed race. And his mother also gave him the gift of adoption. So he was raised in a camp family with 13 children,
all
of them adopted, multiracial. He had a beautiful life. And
how old is he today?
He's probably in his 40s, mid-40s.
What a story.
Yeah. And so he himself now, I think, has 5 kids, and some of them are adopted, and a couple of them are natural.
Yeah, that is such a problem. We need to hear from him more often, because that is the scenario that everybody says or thinks.
Exactly.
Is the, you know, make or break. Okay, of course you would never want a woman to have a child if she was the victim of rape. Well, of course that's a traumatic and awful. It's a crime. It's a sin.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the fact that it's a real baby.
And a human being that has so much opportunity to offer to
and
the world.
Potential. Absolutely.
Yes. So, and you know, and it's interesting, because our theme, and we're sharing this theme with the March for Life in D.C., is unique from day one, pro-life is pro-science. And the fact of the matter is, it's an observable scientific fact that a person is a human being from the moment of conception.
Amen.
And that they are a person that has potential until death. They're not a clump of cells with potential for life. That's an incorrect assessment.
That's another thing that we can't say often enough.
Yes.
That the science is incontrovertible.
It is.
You know, that the consensus has just grown to the point where you can't argue the fact that it's a human being. You just can't argue it anymore.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, and so a human being, no matter what circumstance in which they were conceived, certainly is a human being. And we have to look at them as a child of God, no matter how they were conceived. And that's what Ryan talks about. So.
Yeah.
Well.
You can find the schedule of all tomorrow's Respect Life events in Chicago by going to marchforlifechicago.org. Next up on Catholic Chicago was the director and chaplain of Calvert House at the University of Chicago, Father Andrew Logminas.
We're talking with Father Andrew about his ministry at Calvert House at the University of Chicago.
Very famous.
So you're doing campus ministry, and you're doing it at one of the premier universities in this country, in the world. So you're doing it with very bright students.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about that part because I'm very fascinated by that. But why don't you first just tell us about campus ministry in general, what it's like to be working with young people at this day and age?
I personally find it incredibly vibrant. You know, the young people we have at Calvert House, and I think this could be said for many of our campus Catholic campus ministries, not just in Chicago, but really across the nation, the young people we have who are consciously in this day and age choosing on their own accord while they're at university years to come and practice the faith, to live their faith in a conscious way, are oftentimes very dynamic young individuals. They're people who are living in a culture with so many choices, with so much information at their fingertips and so many options out there, and are choosing to remain Catholic. It's not just something that we take for granted, but it's something that they're making a conscious choice. And then to see, to foster that within them, that commitment to the Catholic faith, and to hear from them what they love about being Catholic while also helping them to discover new facets of our Catholic faith. For me, that's just an incredibly dynamic experience because you're dealing with individuals who are making choices that are going to impact the rest of their lives. To walk with somebody as he's discovering or she's discovering the faith for the first time, or a lifelong Catholic as they're seeing new horizons in our faith, it's a tremendously
Andrew,
dynamic.
You're dealing with young people, very bright people, University of Chicago. What are some of their questions that they ask you over and over again?
It's a great question. The questions really do range, but some of the questions, interestingly, when it comes to, there's technical questions that come up sometimes because on a secular campus like University of Chicago, people, of course, are very learned. They're curious. They have the life of the mind, and they'll want to know the answers to certain questions, maybe theological or historical. But they can also ask their professors those questions as well. They can or research them. When they come to me with a question, oftentimes there's some pastoral or spiritual background to the question. So I might hear a student might be asking, okay, about Augustine's conception of evil. But behind that question is a personal question. Why is there evil? How does evil relate to the existence of God? And I listen for that deeper personal and spiritual mm-hmm. question. I don't just try to stay at the technical level, but in answering a question, we'll go deeper. And so questions that come up often are, you might say, the classic questions, you know, why is there evil? How do we grow spiritually? How do I pray? How do I grow in prayer and relate to others as a disciple? Some of the questions that come up nowadays, especially in a very pluralistic kind of context we are, is how do I live my Catholic faith and share it in a way which is welcoming to others while also sharing what I love about being a Catholic? And so there are questions that range, but really a lot of questions that
I remember, you'll like this too, Graz, I was a very young priest, even younger than Andrew, so it was my first assignment with George Cain at Holy Spirit. And I had a great discussion with George one evening. We were at dinner about good and evil. And I said, George, why be good? Why be good? I was expecting some big theological answer because he was very bright, and he'll be 93 next week, class of 51. And George looked at me and said, why be good? He said, because it's the only way to be happy. And I thought, huh, think about that. Why be good? It's the only way to be happy, because when we are good and caring and loving, the deepest part of us is fulfilled. When we're not good, we're not happy. And change the whole pulse. I was expecting some big theological answer, long stuff. It's the only way to be happy. And I always remember
Amen.
That.
See,
amen.
You don't have to go to the university. Your university, the Gregoriana.
The Gregoriana. To talk to George Cain. But, you know, it's such a simple answer.
It's true.
It stayed with me now for about 35 years.
Amen.
You know, you mentioned that these young people are making a choice. And obviously, in today's culture, it's not an easy choice.
Right.
Because there's a lot of resistance. I'm wondering, is it an especially difficult choice at a place like Chicago? Because, you know, with the bright students there, a lot of them have no faith. You know, a lot of them have made a very intentional decision to reject faith, to reject a notion of God.
Right, yes. at the University of Chicago, there's a spirit of kind of critical inquiry, a spirit of critical discussions. And so for an individual who's tepid in their faith or unsure, the professors in the classroom discussions are going to go in all those avenues that are going to bring up questions and doubts in the faith. So every student's going to be confronted with those questions one way or the other about faith. They're going to find themselves, perhaps for the first time in their lives, having no one there who's giving them the answers to those questions, and any doubts they may have had about faith are now brought forth in classroom discussions and sometimes just left there, or the professor might even raise a question or kind of criticize something about the faith. What it does is it forces the question. It forces the question, am I a Catholic? Do I really believe this? And if so, what am I going to do about it? And there's a intellectual integrity I find among our students that once they face that question, they have to answer it. So there are some people who don't face that question. They just kind of sit there and let the doubts remain. But oftentimes I find students who have this conscience about them that say they may have for a couple of years been wrestling with it, but now they want to address it once and for all. Okay, let's answer these questions I've had and let's move it forward.
But now you're getting students from all over the world with incredible backgrounds, and it must be for you exciting with this variety.
Oh, it's tremendous. And it's really, it's exciting because you have a little sampling of the whole Catholic Church there. Our community is small in size, perhaps in terms of numbers compared with maybe a very large parish. But then the people who in our pews are from literally all over the world, from most continents on the world. It's always a joy for me to see people who come and say this is their first time, you know, celebrating Mass in English, or for some people, it's the first time they've actually discovered Catholicism because they may be from a country that doesn't have a strong Catholic presence. And a friend of theirs brought them to Calvert House, and now they're experiencing Catholicism kind of for the first time. So truly an international group of students, which really brings a vibrancy and a diversity of perspectives.
So Andrew, campus ministries offer a lot of activities for students, retreats, service projects, spring break service trips. What kinds of activities do your students gravitate toward?
I see consistently, I say four pillars we have, one of which is service, is one that comes up very frequently. Students know that when they hear the message of Christ and the gospel to serve others, they want to live that out, but sometimes they don't know how to do it or where to go, and they know they can do it in their everyday lives, but to actually have a context where they can help feed the hungry, where they can help instruct people. We have different programs such as a homeless food run, which goes makes food and delivers it to the hungry, and we have a program that kids in the area can come by and receive tutoring from our students. And so a number of students are really interested in these service opportunities. After service, Bible studies are very popular. At least there's a lot of requests for Bible studies. People will open the Bible, they'll see that there's a lot there. They want to dive deeper in the spiritual side and on the literal side, but they sometimes don't know where to go with that or even just to have a group to talk about it with. And so Bible studies are very frequently requested. And then finally, you might say opportunities to learn about the faith and ask questions, but ones that are somewhat formal but open enough that they can ask questions. So sometimes to ask a question individually, there's, you know, you have to kind of have a question in mind, but to sit there with others and just, I don't know, explore various facets of the faith, or even if it's just about good Catholic literature or whatever it is, and then ask the questions. I find that those are very popular.
You mentioned four pillars. I think you mentioned you gave us three.
Yes, so service, spirituality, formation, and that's the formation piece being kind of those more intellectual pieces. And finally, fellowship. So we have different opportunities. For example, we have every Monday evening our undergraduates. It doesn't have to be Catholic undergraduates. Any undergraduate in the university can come in and share a meal. It's a meal cooked by students for students. And it's a great way for people who are Catholic or not Catholic to come in and feel welcomed and just to have a space in our chaplaincy.
On a personal level, when you were ordained in 2010, you were assigned to Mary Seat of Wisdom as an associate pastor, then off to Rome for doctoral studies. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you miss being a parish priest?
It's a great question. I have to say yes, and in the sense that I think every diocesan priest is formed and has the heart of the parish. I mean, especially I could say being in Rome, I enjoyed it. It was a good experience, opportunity to study. I love the intellectual life. But in the heart of a diocesan priest is the parish. I could say where I'm at now, it's a parish also. It's a chaplaincy, but it's a parish. It's a lot of people, that's their
parish
home. A very
unique parish.
Very unique parish. So I feel, and I do serve as pastor for those students there. And so in that sense, I'm living out both the pastor, the parish side, as well as the chaplaincy intellectual side.
You see, we were ordained to be pastors.
Amen.
Thanks to Father Andrew for joining Father Greg and Gratz on our program. A reminder, you can hear all our radio programs either live streamed or at your convenience by going to archchicago.org. Click on the radio TV stamp. Thanks to our friends here at Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM for letting us join you every Saturday morning. We thank you for listening. I'm Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.